And then in 74, around June, July of 74, they had a major inspection of a unit that was a couple blocks away from us. This unit was directly assigned to the 82nd Airborne, which any civilian out there, you ask them, you know, what the 82nd Airborne is, and everybody knows the 82nd Airborne. You know, that's the military's delight, people that fall out of airplanes, people ain't got no sense, jump out of airplanes. This unit was inspected, and when they would do an inspection, they would come out and they would call an alert, round everybody up. They would take all their equipment out to Langley Air Force Base, which is about 15 miles away, and a large aircraft would land at Langley, pick them up, and then fly them to Fort Bragg. And then their job was to load up the 82nd Airborne and fly them to wherever they're going to and unload the aircraft. When 82nd goes, yeah, they got the paratroopers that jump in, but you got a lot of gear also that goes by aircraft that after they secure the runway, the paratroopers, the aircraft land, and then we have to unload that cargo from the aircraft. Trucks, tanks, cranes, whatever. Well, anyway, this unit failed the inspection. They were trying to push vehicles that wouldn't even start on the airplane. Bottom line was the commander of the battalion got relieved and a whole bunch of people got fired, and they basically rebuilt this company, the 870th Transportation Company. So a bunch of us rookies got transferred over to this company. Now, this other company I was in, there was no conflict, no racial problems. Maybe I was young and dumb. I'd just been there for a couple of months, and I hadn't really learned about it yet. But here I was being assigned to another company. Everything I own is in one duffel bag. It's in a green bag that, when you stuff it full, weighs maybe 80 pounds. Well, I had just got this brand new renovated barracks. Everybody else is living in bays with 20 to 40 men in an open bay. Which, if I wanted to live with 40 men, I'd stay at home and live with my brothers and sisters, whatever. Got my own private room now, I'm somebody, but I'd get transferred over to this other company. And the first thing I checked out was, that building ain't been renovated yet. I'm back to open bay. Well, I gotta go anyway, because they take a whole bunch of us privates and transfer us over there. I take my duffel bag, and I'm walking up to the front of the building, and there's six steps that go up to the front door. As I'm coming up to the steps that are on my left, I'd have to make a left turn up the steps. Somebody else is approaching me, and I'm carrying this bag over my shoulder. Now, you got to realize, in 1974, I was 17 years old. I was 5'4" and 130 pounds. So I was a little bitty guy. I looked up as I was about to go up the steps, and there's this officer. Well, I took my bag, and I threw it down to the ground, snapped it off my shoulder, and I slapped a salute up there. And this officer, I believe it was a lieutenant, he saluted. And then he made a left turn to go up these six flight of steps in the front of the door. There were two guys sitting on the steps. And the lieutenant looked at him and said, "Don't you two know how to stand up and salute?" They looked up at him and said, "Fuck you," and walked off. And I'm flabbergasted. I'm like, what am I walking into? I walked on in there, and at the front door of each one, there's what's called a CQ. I asked the CQ, "I'm here to report for duty." They said, "Go into the day room with the rest of the people." The day room's like a break room where they got pool tables and couches and TVs and stuff. So I go in there, and I'm sitting in there waiting to be given my assignment, billeting, which place to sleep, whatever, everything. There's a bunch of us in there. Well, I sat up in the corner, was watching TV, along with some other GIs there. One guy gets up and goes over and changes the channel on the TV. And this other guy said, "Motherfucker, I was watching the other channel." And they go, "Oh, fuck you, I'm going to watch another channel." And he reached over, the guy that was first complained about watching the channel, took the guy that had changed the channel, took him by the neck and picked him up and threw him through the open window. Which, remember, we went up six flights of steps to get in that first floor. So he went out the window and down about 10 feet to the ground. Nobody said anything. Nobody got up. Nobody did anything. It's like Darwin's theory. The biggest and the strongest survive. But there was something wrong here. There was no authority. There was no organization. There was problems in this unit. But now remember, I'm still a little guy and I'm trying to survive, and I ain't saying squat. You learn in the military, you protect your space, and your first instinct is individual survival. Although it should be survival of the larger unit. You should all work together, and if you work together, more will survive than everybody as an individual trying to survive. But this was my first shot at seeing an organization that was not organized. And it was also where I started seeing the races that were physically fighting amongst each other. So that was my exposure there. And I stayed there for 3 years and decided working in the hull of a ship at 120 degrees inside the hull of that ship is not something I want to be doing. Later on, I reclassified in 1978 and transferred over to the Chemical Corps and was sent to Europe.
In the Chemical Corps, what was the outlook as far as for the Chemical Corps, your outlook going into that group?
Well, before I got into the Chemical Corps, you got to remember that I've been told all my childhood that I was dumb, wouldn't amount to anything, would never accomplish anything, and I'd be dead before I was 21. And I believed all this. Now, I don't believe a lot of psychological mumbo-jumbo and this parent-child psychology and a lot of this, what I think is a lot of it's crap. But there's one thing that, from experience, I can say. If you tell somebody something, I don't care if it's a child, an adult, or whatever, if you tell them long enough and often enough something, eventually they will believe it. So I really believed that I was dumb, I was irrelevant, non-important, and would never amount to anything. And it wasn't until after I'd been in the military for a couple of years, I'd made a couple of promotions, which is automatic with time. You know, if you stay there long enough, you're going to get promoted. My promotions came a couple months early, no big deal. But then I want to get promoted higher, and you have to go take these tests. And they place you in your test along with your peers. And you have to get points to get promoted, so you have to go to school. Well, when I was in basic training, the drill sergeant made me go take a GED test. And I passed it. But I thought, whoopee, you know, anybody can pass, you know, get lucky and pass a test. I never even knew what my scores were. They just said, you passed, you've got a GED. Well, to me, a GED was nothing, a piece of garbage. It was a bullshit degree. Didn't amount to nothing. It wasn't real. It wasn't like a high school degree. But anyway, after I started going to school to get promoted, I took a couple of college courses, and I passed them. And I said, this ain't that tough. Then I started seeing my peers around me, and I started seeing where I was being slotted against my peers. And it appeared that I was not the dumb idiot that I'd been told I was all my life. So I said, look, you know, I can do something. I can be somebody. I can accomplish something. I can learn. The biggest thing to awaken my eyes was not that what your intelligence level is, but do you have the ability to learn? Later on, when I got my college degree, a professor told me that when you graduate from college and you get your degree, way you use it is you go up to that door of that prospective employer and you knock on the door and he opens up a little peephole and you take your degree and you stick it up there in that peephole for him to see. And he reads it, yep. And he opens the door and lets you in. But when you go into that employer's door, you might as well take your degree and throw it back out behind you because it's going to do you no good no more. All that degree says is, look at me, I have the ability to learn. Because the last thing he wants you to tell him is, well, this is the way we learned to do it in school. Damn that, this is the way we do it here. This is the way we want you to do this, and this is the way we want you to do that. An individual that has the ability to learn can get anywhere and do anything in this country. Not what you have learned or what you think you know, but as long as you have the ability and the willingness to learn, whatever it may be. What was the question, Mark?
When you went into the chemical corps, you were sent to Europe. What was your responsibility in Europe, and what did you say?
I was sent to the 1st 48th Infantry in Gelnhausen, which was just west of the Fulda Gap. Now, if you study European history, a lot of the forces through history that invaded Western Europe invaded through what is now called the Fulda Gap. And NATO and everybody always thought that if Russia ever came through and made a full-fledged invasion, that they would come through the Fulda Gap, which is a gap between the Bavarian Mountains and the swamps of central eastern Russia. Anyway, that's where I was assigned to. We were first line defense of the Fulda Gap. We had a life expectancy of about 21 minutes if the Fulda Gap was ever actually invaded. I was in an infantry unit. When I got there, there was somebody else already assigned to my position. So because somebody was already there, I was classified as excess. Well, I also found out that it was a 6-month waiting period to get a place to live. Now, my family was in Colorado with my parents, with my dad. So 6 months is too long to wait to get my family back together. So I finagled an assignment to Frankfurt, which was about 60 miles to the west, in one of the largest cities in Germany. So I got assigned to Frankfurt to a new detachment there. It was 16th, 18th Chemical Detachment, which were just being changed over to the 22nd Chemical Company under 3rd Armored Division, 5th Corps. At that time, I was an E5 sergeant. We're called Buck Sergeant, because that's the lowest sergeant you are. And I was assigned to a squad in chemical decontamination platoon of the 22nd Chemical. After I got sent to 22nd Chemical Company, we were, anytime you're around a major divisional headquarters, you're a dog and pony show, what term we use. A lot of politics and a lot of show and tell. Another term is called being underneath the flagstaff. It's a lot better when you're 50 miles away from headquarters and you're out somewhere where the boss isn't looking at you every day. So there was a lot of tension, a lot of pressure, and a lot of things that went on that don't normally go on in the unit. We were sent to a place called Wildflicken to do ITT, individual tactical training. This is in dead of winter. It's cold, it's miserable, you're in tents. You walk and you march every place. You got to go through all the firing ranges, escape and evasion, first aid. It's a whole week of training out there. None of the training was right. None of the scheduling was correct. Meals didn't show up when they were supposed to. When they did, they were cold. We'd walk or march 10 miles in the dead of winter to a training, to a range to fire weapons, and get there, and somebody else is using that range. Ammunition, the quantity and the amounts and the types were incorrect. It was just a general screw-up the whole time period. We finally worked our way through it. Time period's over with. But we were delayed a day getting out. Now, you cannot convoy in Europe with military vehicles on a Sunday. We got done too late to leave out of there to head back to Frankfurt on Saturday. So we're going to have to stay over the weekend and go back home on Monday.